This is WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro. This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call. It's time to hear a little bit more of Heart while we're getting ourselves organized here. This is Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call. I'm Dick Paddock, co-host and button twiddler, and sitting across from me is Lorraine Hoyt, the other co-host, and we have four people here from Jewish Voices for Peace. Did I get that right? No.
Yeah, two of us are from Jewish Voice for Peace, and then some other allies who are really well informed.
Okay, so I got it partly right anyway.
Oh, so any good allies can tell about the organization when we get to them. Right. Yeah.
And you're listening to WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on the radio, or streamed from the website that WCOM has, which is wcomfm.org. And we have one other connection to the outside world, and that is we have a number where you can call in to answer questions or ask questions or comment, whatever you like. And that number is 919-246-9639. That's 919-246-9639. So, Lori, go ahead and
get started. Well, as Dick said, we have Jewish Voices for Peace with us and a few allies. We're delighted to have four wonderful people show up. And where shall we start? Maybe, Beth, you were my first contact. Shall we start with you, Beth Brooks? And do you want to tell? We'll start off and just tell our listeners about Jewish Voices for Peace. And I understand that recently there was a convention, and I think there's a lot of things that you're all working on. So I don't know if we'll have enough time, as much time as we'd like, but we can at least start.
Yes, thanks, Lori. My name is Beth Brooke, and I'm with Jewish Voice for Peace, North Carolina chapter. Noah and I were just at the convention, national member meeting in Baltimore. They don't like to call it a convention, but we do it anyway sometimes. I think we're particularly excited about some of the work that Jewish Voice for Peace is doing right now in terms of really working for peace in Israel-Palestine, to respond to the call from Palestinian civil society for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, or we'll call it BDS sometimes, and full right of return and things like that. And in keeping with that BDS call, we have been working in Durham on some campaigns to drop G4S, who provides security in Durham, as well as in Israel-Palestine.
Who is providing security?
G4S.
What is that?
It's a private, kind of for-profit police force. They have arrest power. They provide security at the checkpoints. A lot of folks have divested from them worldwide, actually.
So it's an Israeli
security? It's an international organization. I forget where they're headquartered. I think it's moved around a little bit, maybe somewhere in Europe, I believe. But
So they're international, but they do checkpoints in...
And they provide for the infrastructure and prisons in Israel-Palestine. They've been involved in human rights violations in the United Kingdom and various allegations of killing folks in South Africa, Australia, worldwide. So they provide a lot. They're a huge security firm.
So they're in Durham also?
They're in Durham also. And all over the United States, they do a lot of...
I don't think most people know that.
I think that's true.
We'll spend a whole program on that some other time. Yeah,
and then some of the other efforts we're working on right now involve really working to fight Islamophobia and anti-Arab racism. And so we're working with our allies on those efforts.
Wow. Boy, that's another big one.
Yeah.
And I think here in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, we're particularly aware of it due to the recent tragic shooting of three young Muslim students, which is, I think people are still shocked by that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And it was so hurt. And I think it was work we were already doing, but it was a wake-up call that we needed to do it better and more strongly. I came to the memorial at UNC, and it was just... it was heartbreaking, but so wonderful to hear about their lives.
Their lives is certainly inspiring many people.
Yes, and their work. So
yeah, so you're working on not a narrow front. You have you're expanding the broadness of what you're working on. Yeah, not just Israel, Palestine, but I guess freedom and justice issues or liberation issues. In a broader context.
Definitely, yeah. Do you want to speak more to that?
Noah's here too. He was also at that convention.
Hi, I'm Noah Rubin-Bloss. I'm also a member of Jewish Voice for Peace here in the Triangle. And, yeah, I mean, even with G4S, for example, there's a lot of connections. They have a presence also on the U.S.-Mexico border. They run the buses that transport people that are being deported in a lot of cases. So some of the actions that undocumented community has done to try to prevent so many people from being deported have actually targeted the G4S buses. So that's another.
They're different than the Border Patrol,
mm-hmm.
which also has a very bad reputation for abuses that they have done, but this is like a sort of like what, just a roving for money police force.
Yeah, it's a private security company, so they get contracted out to do all types of policing and security by governments that are trying to privatize their work.
I didn't know about them, so yeah. This is learn something new and horrible every day, week, or what? Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
well, I want to talk a little bit more about the campaign that we're doing around G4S in Durham, because it's actually, we had a victory, but it's also a pretty important time for folks to continue to get involved. Mm-hmm. In November, we got the county to drop the contract with G4S, so that is great.
Good for you.
Yeah, it was a lot of work. A lot of folks coming out, you know, talking to the county commissioners about what G4S is doing in Palestine and Israel, and also their role globally. However, what has happened is they've reopened up the contract for bidding, so any company that does private security can bid to fill the contract, and we believe that G4S is one of the companies that has rebid. So we're in a place where we need to keep the pressure on mm-hmm. the Durham County Commissioners and make sure that they don't choose G4S. And because we were very explicit about, you know, we're doing this in support of the call from Palestinian civil society for boycott, divestment, and sanctions. But the County Commission didn't necessarily say that publicly. Mm-hmm. So they haven't made a commitment to us that they won't rehire G4S. So mm-hmm. we're going to be going out to the county commissioner meetings, and mm-hmm. we're going to be bringing a petition to them that has 5,000 signatures from people across the globe thanking them for dropping the contract and asking them to continue. So,
well, what does Durham, what policing or security does Durham use any company for? What do they do?
The role that G4S has so this is the county, and in Durham, the city and the county are separate. Mm-hmm. So there's county facilities. It's about $1 million contract, just under $1 million, I think. And they are the security guards at libraries, at the social services building, at county parking lots. They patrol other county facilities that exist. And some of them have arrest powers, so they can actually just act as full police officers. Some of them carry guns, some of them don't, but there's definitely a militarized presence in our facilities.
Wouldn't it be better to hire local people? I'm sure people in Durham, many people need jobs, and by the time you pay these foreigners to be coming in from, you know, wouldn't it be better to have, I mean, but that's a whole different part of the issue, but yeah.
Yeah, and well, it is, I mean, it's people. You know, the company is an international company, so they're getting the profits for all this horrible stuff that they do. But it is, you know, local folks from the Triangle for the most part that have the job. So we are hoping, one of our demands is that they rehire, that the workers get rehired, because there is a policy supposedly that when a new company comes on, that they're supposed to rehire the workers from the previous company. So
the workers themselves were it was managed by this company, but they hire local. Okay,
yeah,
I think
so.
Together,
yeah.
Okay, so you're just trying to make sure that it's not this particular company that has such a bad human rights violation record.
I mean, of course, we also have concerns about policing in general, and, you know, people with guns walking around, able to arrest people in our libraries and other county buildings. So we have been trying to figure out how we can tie that in and try to have a less less police presence in general as well.
Yeah, good
but
for you.
But it's been, that has been difficult, so.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that after all we've been going through with Ferguson and around the country with the whole Black Lives Matter and other groups about that, this whole militarized sort of professionalized core of people with guns is just, you know, really scary and upsetting, and I don't think a lot of us even quite understand all that's going on with that. But the thought of somebody with guns, who's going to be, you know, in the library, what, a big book theft? Yeah, I don't mean to make light of it, but, you know, it's like, oh, gosh. Well, thank goodness that you're all bringing this to light.
Thank you.
And working on that, yeah.
Yeah.
So should we bring in, we have two other guests here who are with Jewish Voices for Peace or an allied organization. Want to tell us about who you're with? And
sure. My name is Ran Baron. I am an Israeli. I work with in part of Jewish Voices for Peace and in quite a few other organizations as well. I'd like to speak to the larger boycott, divestment, and sanctions
yes,
campaign.
Right.
What we're about, why is BDS an important campaign, why it's important to pressure Israel. To preface this, I want to say I'm Israeli. I was born in Jerusalem. I lived in Israel for a substantial part of my life.
Okay.
And I've been in a triangle for the last 12 years. And I wholeheartedly support of a Palestinian civil society call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions in order to pressure Israel to achieve a just solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I think we've gotten to the point in the last couple of decades that nothing seems to shift Israeli policy. It does not matter whether U.S. administration is supposedly more pro-Israeli or less pro-Israeli. It's not enormously relevant whether the Europeans are more pro-Israeli or less pro-Israeli on a governmental level. Israel has continued to be a belligerent occupying power. It has continued to illegally occupy Palestinian land, to illegally move its own civilian population onto occupied land in increasing numbers. And furthermore, it has continued to discriminate against the Palestinian population living within Israel itself.
Mm-hmm.
In many ways, in a very concrete way, Israel is a Jewish supremacist state.
A Jewish what?
Supremacist state.
Ah, yes.
It has moved from a notion of providing a national safe home for Jews to providing an exclusive and belligerent home for a subset of the Jewish population that has become supportive of an extraordinarily belligerent nationalistic trend. Nationalistic, belligerent, violent trend.
Why?
We've gotten to the point at this stage where I believe that the only way to change the trend in Israel is to have strong economic pressure on Israel, much in the way we had strong economic pressure on South Africa under apartheid. To me, Israel is an apartheid regime. We see many of the same markers as South African government had in South Africa. In many ways, some things that are more extreme than what happened under apartheid. And yet, while the anti-apartheid movement gained very relatively quick traction among liberals, many liberals today are very reticent of applying the same kind of pressures to Israel because they're afraid of being anti-Semitic.
Exactly. That's at least one big part of it.
Absolutely. And I'm here to say not at all. There is an enormous, enormous difference between being anti-Zionist, between being against the belligerent, violent occupation of Palestinian land and being anti-Jewish. We're all Jewish. Mm-hmm. All four of us are Jewish. And Jewish Voices for Peace is a Jewish organization.
Yeah.
And there are many, many young, progressive Jews who are standing up and saying, enough.
Yeah.
It is time to separate us from what the actions of the Israeli government that does not speak for us.
But that's all why I think you're so powerful in what you say, because you are Jewish, you know, and you're even Israeli as well as being Jewish. And I think that gives you the ability to say things that other liberals may feel a little timid about voicing as strongly as you're able to do. But go ahead.
Absolutely. And a case in point is, you know, about 10 days ago, we had elections in Israel. Many people were very depressed about it. I wasn't. I think, actually, the election was a very positive result. We did two things in the election. We have increased Palestinian representation in parliament to levels which have not been seen in a very long time. Voting among the Palestinian sector increased from 55% to 66%, which is an enormous achievement. And on the rest of the parliament, we maintained the status quo, which is essentially what was expected. The government did shift somewhat to the right. And from my point of view, this is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing because this is showing the true face of Israel. Israel is a pseudo-fascist, occupying, belligerent power, and is doing everything in its power to repress violently, including economic violence and military violence, its Palestinian population. And yeah, so I think this is in fact good for us. This is exposing the true face. This is what we want to see from here is more people standing up and saying, no, Israel's true face is fundamentally racist. And therefore, we need to move toward boycotts, towards divestment from Israeli companies, towards international sanctions against this racist, belligerent state.
And so it sounds like you have some hope that with the fig leaf torn away from where we want this peace process to acknowledging that there's absolutely no interest on Israel's part in a peace process or a two-state solution, I think I even heard some in our government were talking about recalibrating. Now, whether that translates to action, you know, their stance towards Israel and Palestine. But it does at least let us know the reality of what we're dealing with instead of pretending that we're doing something else. Yeah. And Tal?
Yes. Hi, I'm Tal. I'm also Jewish and Israeli.
Oh, you're Israeli also?
I am also Israeli. I was born and grew up in Israel. I moved to the States 3 years ago. I think one of the things that are very important to understand is that, yes, the government has shifted to the right in Israel. That is also good because there was no other way the elections could have gone. The other major party running for prime minister position, for being the biggest party in the parliament, is the Labour Party, which is perceived as left to some extent, but it is not left. Their economic views are neoliberal rather than the Likud's neoconservative approach. And in terms of its approach to Palestinians, it has consistently been nationalistic and racist. When talking about Palestinian citizens of Israel, the Labour Party and Labour governments have consistently passed and supported and continued discriminatory laws and land appropriations.
Mm.
When talking about Palestinians in the occupied territories, Labour Party has always been expansionist. The settlements have always grown at higher rates under Labour governments.
Really?
Yes, yes. Never in any formal offer for peace accords was there any discussion on the Israeli side of a Palestinian state, including the Oslo Accords, which are considered the left's great achievement. There was never discussion of a Palestinian state.
Oh, really? Not in the Oslo?
No, there is no wording referring to a Palestinian state.
I guess we have this myth that...
Definitely.
Wow.
And the Labor has always supported and cheered for offenses on Gaza, on the West Bank. It has never been a truly leftist party.
Yeah.
And that's why it's really important to understand that, yes, the election could not have gone any other way, but in a way this election really refined how much the entire map in Israel, the entire political map in Israel, has shifted further to the right. Because whereas in the past the Labor Party did refer to itself as somewhat leftist, this time they did not dare say the word left. They did not even run under the name Labor. They ran under the name the Zionist Camp.
The Zionist what?
The Zionist Camp.
Oh.
So as to ward off the right wing's accusations of them not being Zionist.
Zionist. Oh, wow.
They voted to ban Parliament member Hanin Zoabi, Palestinian Parliament member Hanin Zoabi, from running again for elections. That decision was flipped by the court in the end. But the Labor Party supported that vote. And in general, lately, more and more in Israel, the word leftist has become a dirty word. It is something that being a leftist is a bad thing. You are a traitor. And I think we saw that very, very strongly when we were over there in the summer during the offense on Gaza. The protests against the offense were very small, much smaller than demonstrations in support of the offense.
Oh.
And the protests were consistently attacked, physically attacked. In one of the cases in Haifa, the town I grew up in and lived in my whole life, our small 250 people peace protest was attacked by 1,500 people, angry mob of military supporters who were throwing rocks and bottles at our heads, calling us traitors and wishing we get raped and killed. In general, an Israeli public, a survey that was published a week before the elections showed that only 8% of Jewish Israelis self-identify as leftist. Only 8% are willing to call themselves leftist because it has become such a taboo word. And that really shows how much the map has shifted to the right, how much any form of dissent, any form of criticism is seen as betrayal. And therefore, the pressure has to come from outside.
Yeah, Dick just held up three fingers and threw us a little. That means we have 3 minutes till we have a station break. We have a station break in the middle, so he kind of lets me know because my back is to the clock.
Yeah. If this is a good time, maybe we'll go ahead and have the station break now.
Yeah, and, okay. And then we'll come back. Any one of you who wants to jump in, kind of let us all know, put your hand up or whatever, or grab a mic. Okay, Dick.
Yeah, so this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. this is a wake-up call, and we're trying to do that about the problems in Israel, particularly the problems that the Palestinians face at this point. We are underwritten by Internationalist Bookstore at 101 Lloyd Street here in Carrboro, within my sight. So come on down and visit the Internationalist. Check out their alternative reading materials, maybe some leftist materials. I feel reasonably sure that that's...
The situation in Israel is mirrored here, maybe not to the extent that you have in Israel, but certainly we've had a shift to the right in this country, too. There's nothing we can brag about around here, although we haven't reached, I don't think, quite the extent it is in Israel at all. So, but anyhow, the Internationalist Books, and they've got great bumper stickers. And they've been our underwriter for all the 5 years or so we've been on the air.
Right. And I remind you that we have a studio call-in line, 919-246-9639, if you have any comments or questions.
Say it again, I think.
919-246-9639.
Thank you, Dick. Yeah.
And
please call in.
Right.
We have four knowledgeable people sitting here who would love to hear your question or comment or feedback. So don't be shy.
Right. And we are the Triangle Women's International League for Peace and Freedom chapter.
And we have a website,
We have a website, triangle.wilpf.org. And Internationalist Books has a website, internationalistbooks.org.
And,
very straightforward.
And if people want to stream us live, because this is a low-power station, and sometimes I know friends of mine who try to listen, the station fades in and out, or they have trouble getting it, even though sometimes they can. So if you're having any difficulty, what can you do, Dick?
You go to the station's website, wcomfm.org,
and
click on the button that says Listen Live.
Listen Live.
In between 5 and 6 on Mondays, you'll hear us. And
yes.
We also want to say that we, being an all-volunteer, non-profit station, we find it necessary to raise funds from every so often. And we're having a public service by Hickory Tavern, which is... Right behind me.
Yeah, it's hosting it.
It's hosting a fundraiser for WCOM, and that, The fundraiser is from 5 to 10 on May 7th, Thursday.
May.
Yes.
Okay.
Start
saving your pennies, folks.
Right.
And just know you don't. If you can't get to the fundraiser, though we wish you would, and meet us and say hello, you can always make a donation.
We're very happy to receive donations.
Yeah.
You can do that from the website, from the donation button. And the fundraiser is from 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. on Thursday, May 7th.
Yes.
And the money that you pay for your food will have 10% taken off the top and donated to the radio station.
If you remember to put your receipt in the basket, don't forget that.
Okay.
Okay. We'll be telling about it in subsequent weeks.
Right.
I guess that's about it. Dick?
Yeah.
Yeah. So now we're going to get back to our guest today from primarily Jewish Voices for Peace. We have Beth and Noah and Tal and Ron. Mm-hmm. I keep wanting to give him another name, and he's been so so gracious about it. and Tal and Ron are but not only Jewish, but they're also Israeli. Which brings a perspective that a lot of us, it's really scary to hear, but important to hear, because our media, just like we complain about Russia and other countries, that we have a lot of censorship, maybe not deliberate from the government, but people sort of self-censor a lot of things. And I don't think many of us heard about protesters in Israel being attacked by mobs because they were trying to protest for peace when there was a brutal war going on against the Palestinians. That's pretty shocking, and that's what Amy Goodman, one of our favorite journalists, does. She goes right to the spot when she can, and she talks to people who have been there. So who wants to go? You've had a chance to think about some points we want to reiterate or make again, or the floor is open. we're all thinking. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Just a number of thoughts, one of which just wanted to bring up with our local representatives and Netanyahu's speech to Congress. And there was a big campaign by Jewish Voice for Peace to skip the speech. And a number of our members met with local representatives. And G.K. Butterfield, who's head of the Black Congressional Caucus, was very public about skipping the speech and his reasons why and encouraging other congresspeople to do likewise. And David Price was a little bit more noncommittal, but he said he wouldn't go to one of our members, and he didn't go. So,
well, good. He was quiet, a little more quiet about it, but he did the right thing ultimately. Yeah, good.
So that felt important.
That's important work, you know, really letting the politicians know how people are thinking, because, you know, politicians, what do they say? They don't lead the parade. They follow, and they need to be pushed or pressured. I mean, you know, they want to get voted against. So, Noah, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really – that was a really big deal that happened because, yeah. I mean, I could be wrong about this. Maybe other people are more aware. But to my knowledge, it was the first time that our elected officials in Washington – actually, that anybody more than like a couple of people publicly voiced dissent against the Israeli occupation and in some kind of way. And I mean, you know, it was of course a ridiculous situation where the Republicans had invited Netanyahu to come without even talking to the White House and this sort of thing. But it seems like this is a really important moment, particularly with the election, for us to keep the pressure on with BDS campaigns and also with our elected officials, because U.S. tax dollars are a huge way that the Israeli military gets money. So mm-hmm. as taxpayers, many of us, we have, you know, we're implicated in that as well and have some responsibility to try to put the pressure on in that way as well.
Absolutely. I think we all have a little ray of hope that this may be a little bit of an opening here, that Netanyahu, to say, has taken that fig leaf off. He's come right out in his desperation to be sure to get reelected. And it's pretty hard for our government and the Europeans to pretend that they are an honest partner in any kind of a peace process at all. We don't know if that's going to translate to action, you know, whether they'll hope that Americans, we tend to be ahistoric and forget things within about 2 weeks or so, but maybe not, maybe not.
You mentioned BDS again, and I wanted to follow up on that. If there are people here who would like to participate, at least in the boycott part, I don't know about divestment and sanctions. That's not something that can happen very easily at the local level. But is there some way that you can find out what is actively being boycotted and how you can go about joining in?
Absolutely. There is a wonderful Israeli women's organization who runs a website called whoprofits.org. Whoprofits, spelled as you think it is, .org. It is a growing list of companies that invest in the West Bank. We're not talking about military infrastructure here. We're talking about civilian companies investing in the West Bank who are being incentivized and subsidized by the Israeli government specifically in order to set up shop in the West Bank on occupied land, in areas which are in Jewish-only settlements, which exploit Palestinian workers. The few Palestinian workers that do work there are massively underpaid. But far more to the point, this is occupied land. Israel has no right whatsoever to be there. And if you want to find out who these companies are, go to whoprofits.org and don't buy from them. But more than that, I don't want you to just not buy from them. I want you to tell people that you're not buying from them. If you don't buy Israeli tomatoes, that's great. But unless people know why you're doing that, you're not having a significant effect. Tell your friends. Tell the cashier why you're buying these tomatoes rather than those tomatoes. Every person who knows why you do this is another person who asks a question. Every person who asks a question is a potential ally. Every ally is a potential boycotter, and every potential boycotter is one more piece of the puzzle towards the larger goal of divestment and sanctions against this, again, racist and belligerent state of Israel.
So do you have any kind of, like, little flyer or something? So if you go to talk to a manager at Harris Teeter, for example, or Weaver Street Market or wherever, that not only do you say something, but you can leave. Because I have said something, but after you leave, they'll nod at you politely. You're not sure if they're really taking it in. And if you don't have, I wish you would make one, because I'd love to have that, pass out to all of our members, so that when we do say something, we have a memento to leave. You're smiling. What?
We're all, like, writing notes here about how we should make one. And when we make one, we will make it available online. Or you could make one. Anyone could make one and let us know and we'll publicize it.
It'd be nice to have it, like, from a Jewish voice. Because, again, that whole thing, you being anti-Semitic and picking on, Jews or whatever, it'd be very nice to have something from an organization. And we'd be glad to put our name on it, too, our organization. Okay. We'd be more than glad to. But it'd be nice to have something, especially that, you start off, and then we'll be glad to add our names to it. But just think about that. Let me know when there's one available, because we'd be more than glad to, because I think that would be helpful.
Absolutely. I do want to say that while we don't have one that is locally based, Jewish Voice for Peace, the main website, does have such resources.
As does
whoprofits.org. They are put out extremely well presented, very well visualized diagrams and charts about where this money goes. When you are buying those tomatoes, when you are buying from companies that invest in the West Bank, you are directly contributing to the occupation. For example, one company that you can quite easily boycott, Ahava Cosmetics. Ahava, Dead Sea Cosmetics. It's a very popular brand of cosmetics. It has large-scale investment in the West Bank. It is actively preventing Palestinians from accessing natural resources and recreational resources around the Dead Sea. So there you go. There's one for you. L'Oreal is another one. Cosmetics companies are big on this. And L'Oreal is another one which has significant investments in the West Bank.
And I see a lot of that, and I don't know if that's from the West Bank or Israel proper, Sabra Hummus.
And Sabra Hummus is an interesting story.
Because I've gone and complained about that. To no avail so far. That's why I thought maybe if I had something to leave.
Absolutely. Sabra Hummus specifically funnel money to settlements. This is actually one of the biggest issues. A bit less spoken about issues. The biggest source of settlement, let me change the word. Colony funding is American nonprofits donating to Israeli nonprofits, which then funnel money to settlements. They're widely supported by Sabra Hummus, widely supported by quite a few other leading companies. That's the issue. This is not just about companies that have investments in the West Bank. This is about companies that pass money to so-called charities which directly support the taking of land from Palestinian civilians.
Okay. So this gives an activist something to do that as you say, every little bit it can build if we get the word out to enough people. And so that's the boycott part of it. Divestment, is that to do with getting people who have the money to have investments, or maybe like churches? Isn't there some church that recently... Presbyterian?
Exactly. The Presbyterians, we just need to owe a huge thank you
and
cheer for them.
Let's give a hand to the Presbyterians.
A huge amount of appreciation for them.
And they have been very brave locally, very, very brave locally. The Church of the Reconciliation, they've gotten a lot of flack. Nazis insignia painted on. They've gotten a lot. Things I think are common now, but when they had the bus ads... there are some very mean people in our little bit of heaven here. It's not what all that people wish and hope it was. Yes, so the Presbyterian Church is divested. I don't know if other churches are in the process of thinking about that. I would hope so. I guess what I don't know about, like the big like the teachers fund. I wonder about that. You know, a lot of people, I think Fidelity. So I guess you all have people who are making contact with some of these.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Big because they buy in bulk stocks and everything. So that's the divestment part, and that's where if you can get like enough. It's sort of, you know, you start off and you want to have an avalanche. You start off with a snowball and you're trying to build it to a bigger amount to really have an effect. So, and sanction order, how that would be the government? How would the sanctions work? Is it, no, everybody
I can speak to it. I would like to see at some point, first of all, the first thing I want to see immediately is the U.S. stopping to use its veto power regarding any decisions regarding Israel in the UN Security Council. That's the first step. The UN is a body that can impose sanctions. However, there have already been significant moves in certain European countries to sanction the state of Israel in small ways to reduce scientific cooperation. The European Union implemented a pretty strong conditions on scientific cooperation. Many unions in especially in Scandinavia have decided to sanction Israel by divesting, but also in removing any kind of labor cooperation. It is not merely government. However, I absolutely at some point would support the notion of Israel being seen as a state outside the circles of international legitimacy.
Yeah.
There is no other state that outside the permanent members of the Security Council that is occupying land. The only other one is Morocco, and that is a rather, this is a completely different issue. But nonetheless, there are very, very almost no states belligerently occupying foreign land.
Yeah.
There are no states transferring population to foreign land with the exception of China in Tibet. Being a permanent member of the Security Council, they can get away with it. Why can Israel get away with this? Because it has the U.S., the most powerful of the permanent members of the Security Council, standing behind it. The U.S. must stop using its veto power in the Security Council immediately.
And I think, you know, not to be overly hopeful, but I think that might be a possibility when they talk about recalibrating. I heard that was one of the things that they would that would be considered. Now, I'm not sure where that came from, but you're right, that would make a big difference. I think the more Israel can be isolated and the other big thing, of course, would be all the money we pour in there. Mm-hmm. And I think if our taxpayers could get to realize that their standard of living is a lot higher than a large portion of our own people, you know, that should build up a little resentment because it is terribly unfair when we have such suffering in this country. So we're talking about boycott, divestment, and sanctions, hoping that each element of that could build. And the big thing would be for the U.S. to change its policies, because without that big brother protection, Israel would be strongly encouraged, to put it in a kind way, to change some of its policies. I think the thing that, and you being Israeli, you know better than I. I'd always heard that they were almost like encouraging people to come, like from Russia and other countries, to fill up the settlements. They're trying to, because the birth rate with the Arabs is higher than the Israeli birth rate, that they're trying to bring in a lot of immigrants, and that they're the most vociferous in their protection of the settlements. I don't know if that's an exaggeration or what.
So I think one of the things that Israel as a whole tries to encourage Jewish immigration from the rest of the world, and anyone who has at least one Jewish grandparent can claim citizenship without having lived a day in Israel, without his parents having lived a day in Israel, and receive a lot of financial aid.
Yes.
And part of that is the fact that in general, in the colonies, in those settlements, anyone who goes to live there receives great financial aid. Housing there is much cheaper. Land there is much cheaper. The government encourages anyone to go move to settlements in the West Bank. And in combination with trying to bring immigrants from outside of Israel, giving them those benefits in addition to the immigration benefits. I lost my train of thought.
Sure. So in other words here, we're Jewish. We happen to be Israeli. But anyone who is Jewish has more rights in Israel than a Palestinian living in Israel.
Who was born there.
Absolutely, who was born there. So people who have never been to Israel but happen to be born Jewish have more rights in Israel than Palestinians living there. That is an incredibly unacceptable situation. Mm-hmm. Currently, the biggest encourager of migration is from France. And French Jews in the last few years who have been migrating in enormous numbers are going directly to settlements. There are entire settlements which speak only French.
I didn't know that there was that large... So this is before Charlie Hebdo.
Oh, yes. And what happened after Charlie Hebdo? Israel immediately sent millions of dollars to the Israeli embassy in Paris to set out on campaigns to terrify the Jewish population in France and try to get them to come to this so-called paradise in Israel. Of course, once they get there, not so much.
Yeah.
To bring them in, to have more, to increase the Jewish migration to Israel. Frankly, Israel is currently the least safe place to be a Jew anywhere in the world. You are far more likely to get killed for being Jewish in Israel than anywhere where we've seen a supposed increase in anti-Semitic attacks.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. I didn't know that, and I'm surprised about this large French in-migration even before the Charlie Hebdo thing. What's wrong with France?
Many things, but that'll be another show.
I'm just curious, you know. I can't imagine wanting to leave France to go to Israel, but I guess if you're getting an almost free house, if you're kind of struggling in France, and maybe they're getting to be like us with the 1% and other people. So I guess if there's all this financial incentives, that's always a big lure if you're struggling. And Beth?
You said something about birth rates and that sort of stuff, and I just want to be clear that I feel like there's also a lot of racism even within the Jewish population of Israel, and I don't know all the details. Maybe somebody else can speak to it better, but Tal apparently can. But around the sterilization of Ethiopian Jews, maybe, or just in forced birth control.
Yes. So one of the things that is hardly ever discussed outside of Israel is the social stratification within Jewish Israeli society, which is very stratified. The gaps between rich and poor within Israeli society is one of the largest gaps in the world.
It is larger than the United States.
Yes. And one of the things is very much where the different Jewish communities came from. The European, Western European, and Eastern European immigrants are still considered more prestigious than Jewish immigrants who came from Muslim countries, from Africa and Asia. And the immigration from the former Soviet Union, which started in the early 90s and continued until now, more or less, is even lower, and Ethiopian immigrants are even lower in that sort of scale of how prestigious you would be. And there are a lot of cases, and there have been a lot of cases of very clear discrimination. Further in the back would be the Yemenite children who were kidnapped from their families and put in Ashkenazi and European homes, with their families being told that the babies had died. Different medical treatments, which included spraying recent immigrants with DDT. And
is this in the Israeli press?
I mean, it has been. People in Israel silenced for very, very long, and it is still very much not discussed. And when it is discussed, people will reply with, "Why are you bringing this up? This is all over, and this is finished." But one of the more recent stories, as Beth mentioned, was Ethiopian immigrant women who have been, since getting to the transition camps in Sudan, before even getting to Israel, have been given Depo-Provera, which is a contraceptive which has many side effects. Given that contraceptive without their knowledge of what it is, and not given any choice about it, and those treatments continued for years after they have been brought to Israel by Israeli government in order to reduce numbers of Ethiopian babies being born.
Is this a color issue with Ethiopia, or?
Yes.
All this talk about Israel as this shining beacon of democracy in the land, you know, and I'd also would like you to talk a little bit about the role of women with the Orthodox. I read a chilling thing not too many months ago in the New York Times about a Israeli woman who was a scientist and was winning some very prestigious scientific prize, and she knew that with the Orthodox increased power in Israel that she had to dress modestly. But then when she got there with a long-sleeved blouse and a long skirt and very modest dressing, that she was not allowed to go up on the stage to receive the prize. Her husband had to go up and get it for her. That was in the New York Times, which totally shocked me.
I don't know this particular story. And as I said, Jewish Israeli society is deeply stratified, mm-hmm. and is suffering from internal conflicts within the Jewish Israeli society, and not just between Jewish and Palestinians.
And this was about a conflict between the increased power of Orthodox Jews over the more secular, the Jewish state started with secular Zionism. And so it was tracing that. And so I don't know, we may not want to go there, but if you haven't read the story, you probably don't want to comment.
Don't want to comment.
No,
about
I don't
story.
Blame you. Yeah.
You got about 2 minutes left
to
go?
We've got 2 minutes left to wrap up. This has been, you know, you think you know a lot about something, and there's always more to learn, unfortunately, usually stuff that it's painful. So if you want to just wrap up, whoever wants to, Beth or any of you. We don't want to lose sight of the boycott, divestment, and sanction movement, and things that people can do. And do you have a website? Should we get down your website?
Yeah, if you want to get in touch with the local Jewish Voice for Peace chapter, our website is jewishvoicefortheacenc.wordpress.com. I'll say it again because that was kind of a mouthful. Jewish Voice for Peace NC, that's all one word, .wordpress.com. And there's information there about upcoming events and actions that people can take and that sort of thing. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah. So if anybody's listening and wants to get involved in the campaign that we're doing with G4S in Durham County, you can reach us there as well. If you want to get involved in that type of local action. And I think, I mean, we're, you know, interested in doing other local boycott actions and campaigns as well, in addition to the individual things that we talked about earlier that people can do. So if you want to get in touch with us and we can try to make that happen.
You're giving us so much really valuable information and inspiration because you get so upset with these things to take some kind of action. Yeah. Beth, did you have a last word you wanted to get in there?
Got about 15 seconds.
I'm good.
Okay. It doesn't have to be the last time. I'm sure you'll probably think
stay tuned for Chris Fitzsimon.